Welcome to Manager Tools. The Tyranny of Unpublished Processes, Part 1. Here we go. This podcast answers these questions. Should processes be published or shared? Why should processes be published? And what's a good way to publish them?
Ever wondered who on your team was successfully rolling out the Trinity or who did their one-on-ones last week? Have you ever wondered about your team's percent complete for feedback or your personal percent completion for one-on-ones? If you've ever heard of enterprise reporting, then you know what I'm talking about. When Manager Tools delivers our effective manager training in your office space, one of the benefits is that your team gets roadmap and enterprise reporting for you and your organization. Enterprise reporting allows you to see how each of your team members is doing with Trinity rollout. It shows team completion rates for one-on-ones, not just percent complete, but graphically. And enterprise reporting shows you how many pieces of feedback your team is giving every week. Who wouldn't want to see that? Send us a note about enterprise reporting and if you want us to come and teach your team about the Trinity.
Folks, if your work requires a process, a series of steps involving more than just you, the process needs to be captured and shared. It's just a reality of organizational life. Yeah, it takes time. And yeah, you lose whatever career advantage you get from specialized knowledge, which isn't as great as people think it is. But that's one of the forms of the tax we pay for the magic of organizational productivity. So, Kate, welcome to Manager Tools.
Good morning.
Yeah, we've never done this before. I am shocked. You've been here years and you and I haven't recorded yet.
I'm excited. I get to record with Wendy a lot, but this is going to be great.
We should do this more often.
Absolutely.
Okay, so why don't you take us through the outline and then I'll kick us off.
Great. Our outline today has three parts. We're going to talk about an unpublished process is tyranny. We're going to talk about how sharing isn't publishing and how publishing is actually pretty easy.
Yeah, I'll tell you, I was surprised that I had to write the second and third parts of this relative to sharing and publishing because of some pushback I got from people about, well, you know, I told my buddy about what I do or I put it in an email. But unfortunately, in organizational life, that's not good enough. And if you'd ever told me 15 years ago, however many years ago we started, that I would be writing about tyranny, I would have said, nah, probably not for a management podcast. So let me make the case that an unpublished process is tyranny. And it's, there are people who will say, no, all the tyranny in an organization comes from the company, right? Because tyranny is a big, bad, more powerful thing than you insisting you do something. But in fact, in our own little areas with our team, with our colleagues, with our boss, with our subordinates, we can practice a form of tyranny by being part of a process, owning tasks, owning steps in a process. Doesn't have to be a big one, doesn't have to be an organizational one. We can practice tyranny by essentially saying, no, I do my part and you know, you guys will know when it's done, when I put my code up there or when I share with you, when I send you the document or what have you. There are people even who would go so far as to say, I'm not obligated to communicate the status of my work. The classic example over the last 14 years, which is a little unfair and somewhat tongue-in-cheek, is the developer who is frustrated that her boss wants her code either commented or more generally, they want updates of their code in the database, in the repository. And the boss says, hey, look, you need to communicate about your status. And the developer says, what do you want me to do? You know, that takes time. I'm very busy. I'm a very busy person. What do you want me to do? You want me to write code or you want me to update status? And the manager looks at her and says, yes. but this is different, obviously. And I'm not suggesting that one's writing of code within a module or debugging something that you're obligated to write down every step you took. That's not what we're talking about. There's a difference between workflows and processes, obviously. Okay. So here it is in a nutshell. If your work is combined with somebody else's work to produce value, you're part of a process. And I think most people don't understand that almost no one's work produces value directly. Even a salesperson who closes a sale, if the product is shipped by somebody else and is a small, medium, or large organization, any organization size bigger than one, that's going to rely on someone else doing something. So value creation organizationally always means the creation of revenue, which is how we measure value. So if that's the case, you're part of a process. That's fine. And what most people would say as part of a process is, if you understand what you're doing and you know what you're doing, good. And the other person who's also part of your process understands what they're doing, we're good. You know, that's the nature of work. I can't do her job. She can't do my job. It's fine. But if neither of you understand what the other person is doing, there is a risk for the organization. What Seth Godin would say here, and we rarely disagree with Seth Godin, but he has said, he's known to have said, your knowledge, the specialized knowledge you have about doing what you do your way, is good for your career. The knowledge you have that other people don't have is good for your career. And in theory, that's true, but I think Seth Godin did not mean, and therefore you don't have to be a part of organizational processes, communicate what those processes are, right? Now, I was thinking about this. You mentioned recently, Kate, that you were at Johns Hopkins, the Applied Physics Laboratory, and you got into a conversation with them about work and processes and management and so on, and you brought up that you used to work at Orbital Sciences. You were a rocket scientist. I would assume at a place like Orbital, complex systems, complex processes, governmental customer, that you guys were process heavy, update heavy, status heavy. Is that fair to say?
Absolutely. We kept a lot of status, and a lot of the processes were really heavily documented and then regimented, obviously, either because of the nature of the information, right? Classified stuff,
right.
Or because of the fact that you're in a production lab where even the smallest speck of dust or tiniest bit of electricity can ruin an entire piece of equipment.
I think the couple of stories you told me while you were at Orbital revolved in part around governmental requirements for notifications, for I'm forgetting all the governmental terms for how your processes have to be repeatable. The government says, hey, look, if you're going to do business with us, you have to be robust enough that we can observe your processes so that if, in fact, we learn something about process development, about improving them, about technology that may help, we have access to it, we can see it, and so on, right?
Absolutely. I once had this flowchart kind of thing, like created by Visio, of a series of steps to approve like a comment, which sounds innocuous, and I can assure you is not. And the process usually garnered a certain amount of comments. And then one year we got something like 3 times the number of comments, and I wanted to shorten the process. And at the time I thought, well, we'll just take these steps out. And of course,
yeah,
you're not allowed to do that. You're not allowed to just cross out the boxes and say that that's the new process. It's not how it works, because the Missile Defense Agency cares what's on the flowchart. That's actually really important to them.
I bring that up as an example because there are people right now listening going, oh my gosh, you know, obviously I can understand why the government, we want to do that. They may argue that there's better ways. Don't disagree there. But here's the point. That is an example of an incredibly process-intensive, reporting-intensive, status-intensive environment. If you contrast that with what's popular, which is small startups, which literally have no processes, I'm overstating that, folks, no captured processes, no updated processes, no process controls, no process for creating processes, all that stuff. Right now, in organizations, there is more than any other time I've ever been at work in the last I guess, 40 years, there's never been more push for the freedom of the individual over the needs of the organization. Kate, you and I joke all the time. I talk to people who say, what I really want is a job that I can do what I want, when I want. In fact, if I could just go to Starbucks and hang out and be with my friends when I wanted to and use the Wi-Fi and sit there and kind of do what I need to do and do email and, you know, have fun at my job, that'd be great. And essentially, all of that implies zero oversight, zero communication face-to-face with your colleagues. It sounds great. It's almost this oasis within the new, quote, gig economy. It's and it's about freedom of the individual.
Sure, yeah. And, you know, if I got up every day and people paid me to do whatever I wanted, I would be on reality TV.
Yeah.
I think that's how that, that's what that is, right?
Yeah. Why wouldn't you want to be on reality TV? I mean, it's real. And those are famous people that are really important. And I don't know, they're like cultural icons, right? I mean, don't we all ascribe to that? That's, I mean, you know.
It's not that I don't want. I desperately do. It's more that I don't qualify because I don't shop enough.
Yes, that's right. Well, my point is, right now, individuals, there are people who are listening to this who are surprised that I want to do my, you know, they're thinking I want to do my work. And I, you know, and if you make me document my processes or share them with other people, or even worse, publish them, that takes time. And in a way, if your approach is the individualistic freedom approach and not the, we all have to give up a little bit of our freedoms for the magic of organizational productivity magnification, you know, this is going to be really hard for you to hear. But the fact is, organizations expect this. It's part of what your organization wants. And I'm getting way ahead of myself here. So let's go back to Seth Godin. You know, if you know something the way you do what you do that nobody else knows, that does, in theory, make you more valuable, particularly if you have an individualistic approach to the organization. Mm-hmm. But when you start thinking, and therefore I don't need to publish my process, I don't need to document, I don't need to share, I don't need to comment, I don't need to update my status and so on, that approach puts you above the organization. What our organizations want from us is a process that's robust enough that not only can we do it, but in the event we can't, somebody else could. And what that typically is interpreted as meaning is that if one documents processes, one is a part of, in other words, if you are a part of a process and you document it, you share it, you publish it, you're more easily made redundant.
Right.
And so Seth Godin wins, right? Hey, gosh, why would I want to document this? That means they could replace me.
Goodness. Well,
yeah.
So important.
Yeah, but here's the thing, guys. That's not what your organization wants. They don't want to replace you. They don't, okay? Organizations generally want a fluid internal talent market. It, the company, your organization, your division, your directorate, your office, whatever, it wants people to be able to move around reasonably freely, provided productivity is improved after the transition, although there will be a brief decline, you know, around the transition, okay? Mm-hmm. If you're tied to your existing work because only you know how to do it, that's a form of internal talent market friction. Now, you might say, well, what I'm doing, somebody else could pick up. And I would say two things. One, if it's really easy for somebody to pick up, it's not something that would make you more valuable. But even put differently, if it takes a while for somebody to get up to speed on your thing, the dip in quality or output or productivity around your transition could be material as opposed to trivial. But look, it's more than that. The organization you're a part of also wants process improvement that leads to more value creation. And that means you understanding not just what you're doing, but also how what you do affects others in the value that your process helps you create. And so when you think about it, process improvement is accelerated when you're clear about what your process is, and therefore you don't have to think about it every time you do it, and not or, and B, others can know the process and thereby provide input and thereby potentially make it better. And the fact is, at least theoretically, your organization has to exist outside of any one person. So we've talked about this before on Manager Tools and Career Tools. Succession planning, which is a process companies do in order to promote internal talent market fluidity as opposed to friction. They do that for that reason, right? To help the company exist outside of you. Your organization wants you to be able to quickly train someone else on what you do. That improves fluidity, or put differently, again, reduces friction.
I think, too, the idea that someone else can add to your process, I think we think of that in a way that's detrimental to us. But in fact, I think another thing that can happen when they're documented is people feel more comfortable sharing their input. And so you find ways that add value for your organization simply by a small adjustment to the process. If the process is written down and someone says, you know, if you shared this with me a day earlier, or if the timing was different, or if it came in this format instead of that format, you could increase value simply by having a bit more knowledge on how you're doing it. And that sharing, we think of it as negative.
Yeah, and almost the sharing, the collaboration on that. Here's a funny example of the word collaboration, and people wonder, why aren't people more collaborative? Well, because they're individualistic, because they don't trust the motives of the person who's making suggestions. But here's my story. It's happened so many times. It's a thematic story, which unfortunately I have a very bad example of. I have a very bad analogy of. The analogy that I have is a sort of an urban legend of a story about a guy, a scientist who puts five monkeys in a cage and suspends some bananas from the top of a hook above them that requires them to go up a ladder. A monkey obviously sees the bananas and goes up the ladder, and he gets sprayed with a fire hose, and everybody else gets sprayed with a fire hose too, cold, stinging water. Well, they become hungry, and so another one goes up there, and they all get sprayed. And every time any monkey tries to get the bananas, he or she gets sprayed. Well, then one monkey is taken out, and a new monkey is taken in, right? So still five, but one is new. When the new monkey doesn't know about the spraying, tries to go up the ladder, the other four monkeys say, don't do that, basically, and keep him or her from doing it. And then another one gets subbed out, and another one gets subbed out, and another one gets subbed out. And pretty soon you have five new people working on the process, but none of them know what the incentives and punishments are or understand them. They don't understand why the process was invented. And now you have five monkeys, none of whom have been sprayed by water because none of them have made it up the ladder, and none of them will go up the ladder. Now, I did some research. It's an apocryphal story. It's based on really stupid research. That's why I said it was a bad analogy. But the point I'm making is you have to assume that every bit of work you do is going to be done by somebody else. You know, what's that line? In 100 years, who's going to care? Then you die and somebody else gets to wear your clothes. But that's part of what you're supposed to do in an organization. It's not about you. It's really not about you. And that's why all the talk about CEOs and the focus on CEOs, there are CEOs who say, you know, this is unseemly to be talking about me. When you ask me questions about my personal life, when you ask me about my family, when you ask me about my hobbies, those things really aren't important. The only reason you're here to talk to me is about my role. Let's talk about my role. And the reason my role is important is the role will still be here when I'm gone. So if you are doing work and you leave for good reason, you have a bad relationship with your boss is abusive or your spouse gets a better job in a better location, and you feel like you can move, leaving the company in the lurch is not a professional thing to do. So there are all kinds of reasons why you would do this. And as you alluded to, it's easier to train somebody else when a process is captured externally, when it's published. But guys, here's really what this all boils down to. And it's too bad that we even have to make this argument. We don't publish our processes because we're expendable. We publish them because we're valuable. We don't want to capture what you know in order to get rid of you. We want to capture what you know so you can teach it to others who can learn it like you did, while you do something more valuable for us that leverages what you already know. Guys, this is about the robustness of the organization. Now, there's a limit. We all can't sit around and make the organization more robust without growing the organization. It's not all internal work that makes us successful. It's some combination of external customer service, obviously, societal service, external and internal stuff. But the number is far bigger on internal stuff than most people want it to be. I think most people want it to be 5%, and it's probably closer to 10 to 20%. Right now, the waste in organizations per individual is around 30%. So it's not that big a deal to worry about going from 5 to 10 to 15%. Again, the whole expendable versus valuable argument is a classic one in modern organizations. I would be willing to bet that some organizations fall on one side or the other of this argument. The bigger you get, the more you're perceived as expendable, only because the company asks you to spend more time making processes robust and capturing and documenting and so on, publishing. And the smaller your company is, the more it feels like you're valuable. But in fact, that's a misapplication of the concepts. Seth Godin, again, says you're more valuable when you make the organization less valuable. It's the freedom of the individual versus the tyranny of the organization. But if you start asserting your freedom of individuality against the tyranny of the organization, that's what's in your head. That personal power you are exercising is inherently unharmonious. It's unsustainable. It's uncollaborative. And I would even argue in the purest use of the word, it's unethical. And I don't mean you're lying or cheating or stealing. Not publishing a process is just a different form of tyranny.
Yeah, right? We're saying this information is mine and no one can have it. It belongs to me.
That's right.
It's funny. I actually kind of get this sense from people about work pretty often, more often than I'm comfortable with. It's very much possessive in a way.
Oh yeah.
And it feels a little bit like they've got the ring, right? It's like,
oh yeah,
my precious.
Yeah, that's right.
And what always gets me is the dichotomy between that attitude and at the same time the attitude of we're so busy, we'd love less to do. To me, they're opposing ideas. But I think our point here is that controlling information is at the heart of all tyrannies.
Yes, that's essentially what you're doing. You're being tyrannical around your colleagues. And what's funny is you're not being tyrannical against the company. The company has lots of power. You don't, relatively speaking, because you can't fire the company, but the company can fire you. You can leave, but that's probably not going to hurt the company terribly much. But the point you just made is you're right. If you're on a local level, that's what you're doing. You're tyrannizing your colleagues by saying, no, this is information I have that you don't get to have.
Tyrannies, I think we tend to think of them in terms of empires and things like this, but they don't have to be big. They don't have to be on that scale. In fact, tyrants are people who defend the position by oppressive means, and oppressing information is inherently part of that. And so if we're talking about an unpublished process, that's representative and that's a conceptual tyranny. I'm not going to share my knowledge or information with you. You can't get rid of me because I have something you need. And to be honest with you, I don't know how, true that is. Maybe in our brains, it sounds good.
I will tell you that this will sound really anachronistic to a lot of our listeners, but personal computers made it easier. people feel that they have control over their client computer on the network that the company owns, and their laptop, which they take with them everywhere, which is an extension of themselves and an important part of their quality of life and so on. You know, this is my work. And I would argue that some great organizations will be created in the next 20 years that screen for this. A person being willing to join an organization, a person with low barriers to publishing and sharing and so on. That's it, everybody. Come back next week. You'll enjoy it, I promise.